everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain. I'm Diana, and I'm here with your host, John Abrams. And today we've got special guest Carrie Young back with us for another episode. Today we're going to be talking to Carrie all about the changes in product content management that he's seen and experienced in his work. John, I'm just going to throw it to you and let you kick it off.
Great. And Carrie, great to have you back for another session.
Yeah, great to see you, John.
You know, the thing I'm reminded, we're not spending enough time together, given some really similar upbringing, if you will, in the world of product information. And I think very similar philosophies about the need for end-to-end connectivity. And one of the things that I'll just kick this off with, maybe we'll cover two topics as best as we can fit them into this episode. One, I want to talk about dimming principles, which are a whole raft of efficiency principles, and really, you know, sort of the Bible for how any of us in supply chain operate. And I've got some questions there. And then I want to get into sort of the nitty gritty of, to the extent we can dive in a short podcast, to how you're actually improving the content management experience with your work. And so, you know, how maybe, just thinking on my feet here, maybe how you see the intersection of Deming principles with product management under the umbrella of end-to-end supply chain connectivity. By the way, all of that could be a master's thesis in and of itself. So to fit it into a 20-minute podcast is not possible. I get it. But maybe to start off, I've had this thought for a while now that Deming and all of what we've learned and adopted and lean on in terms of guidance in supply chain is principles that are really good, but were created before the age of computers and certainly before the age of networks. And the itch I'm always trying to scratch is, in a world that is no longer linear in terms of a chain of supply, meaning it gets manufactured, goes to the next step, the next step, the next step, all the way to the consumer, I wonder if in this interconnected age, if Deming would have thought differently about supply chain efficiency. So things like Kanban and many different things that Deming was focused on. Deming at his core seemed to me very focused as a statistician, almost an efficiency expert guided by data. And I wonder if the world of networks, in your opinion, would have guided him differently. My contention is it would have, but I've never done enough research, although we're starting to do that, to see, you know, would he have thought differently about things in the age of an interconnected web or a supply mesh as opposed to a supply chain? Just curious, given you know something about Deming.
Yeah, I don't see how he couldn't have thought differently. I don't think, you know, as smart as he was, I don't think there's any way he could imagine, you know, what we have in place today in terms of networks and meshes and automation. So, I think that's actually part of TQM and Deming, right, is to learn and get better and iterate. So. So I think it would look a lot different for sure. It's interesting because when we started this, many years ago, as you described, it was very linear. The supply chain was linear. The content chain was very linear, and very well defined. Every single sector, had a job and, you know, it was in some ways, although the automation wasn't there, it was simpler to understand. You know, today we'll meet with a company who we think we're thinking we're going in talking to a manufacturer, and we find out that they're mostly, you know, a big part of them is really a distributor. We'll go into a distributor and we'll find out that, you know, 30 or 40% of what they do is manufacture a product, or, you know, same with retailers. And the way that they now interact with each other, and manufacturers wanting to go direct to consumer, and it's, there is no one model, and there is no company, I think, that fits just one model. There, everybody's doing kind of everything. And that's where the technologies really come in handy, because it doesn't have to be one size fits all. You can really use technology to customize your approach and do what makes, I think, the most sense for your particular situation.
Really interesting. And any one of those points, I think we can probe for a long time. I do want to get a sense, though, of, given that as you say, there's no one model anymore, mm-hmm. and that manufacturers and really anybody in the supply chain, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is blurring the lines. You know, I worked for what I thought was a distributor, Cardinal Health, mm-hmm. For a long time. But I had 12 manufacturing plants.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
And I sourced material, and I also did traditional distribution. So Johnson & Johnson product, but I wasn't just moving it to the hospital environment anymore. I was also moving it to Walmart. And so the lines, certainly, as you say, are blurring. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, how do you, you know, with Wind Shuttle and Enterworks mm-hmm. as your platform, how do you manifest or promote the ability to allow a company to blur those lines? How does that actually work within your product set?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think part of it is sort of by definition, you need to be able to take the same base information and make it relevant to whoever you're working with. So the information that may be relevant to the retailer that you're working with could be completely different, maybe, than even the end consumer, or to the supplier, or to the distributor, or to a different market. So, you know, just creating the flexibility for companies to be able to tailor their information and easily and efficiently make it relevant for whatever channel, whatever constituency, wherever it needs to go very easily, and then use automation to know, okay, I'm sending it to this type of constituency. I need to send this information versus this other. So just making it more efficient and more automated so that you can tailor your message in a very precise way to whoever it needs to get to is probably the biggest element of what we do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And just to expand on that a little bit, my contention is, and I say this all the time to folks, is that it has become such a faceted environment. You know, data has different meaning, and the information has different meaning depending on what you're using it for. Of course, that seems very fundamental, almost a very pedestrian statement. But the number of places that a particular set of product information will be used, I don't believe is manageable by humans anymore. I think we've gotten to the stage where, unless you're leaning into automation, you can't keep up anymore. I'm just curious, you know, how you think about that.
Well, we like that, because that's why somebody would come to Wind Shuttle and Enterworks, because they've gotten to that point where they just can't keep up anymore. The number of channels, the number of places where this information needs to get to just isn't physical. It's not physically possible anymore to do it in a non-automated way. So, you know, they come to us in hopes that we have something that can help them not just automate it, but automate it in a way where it improves the information and the relevancy that's being delivered as well.
And out of curiosity, how much pain, and this is a almost an impossible question, but when companies come to you, I have a theory, having worked in fairly large companies for most of my career, I have a theory that the larger the organization, the more pain there is. I'm curious if you find the same thing, and how much pain is there? And I think the pandemic, and we're recording this in August, the pandemic is still waging war on not only society, but on the supply chain, the imbalances and all of that. I'm curious how much pain. I don't know if there's, you know, a scale, but, you know, two questions there. Is the theory that the larger the organization, the larger, the more products, the more customers, pain escalates? And then quantify that. Is it a lot worse in the pandemic? How are your customers presenting their pain to you?
Yeah, so I think it's painful. We're saying pain up and down the company size. So it's not necessarily how many products or how big you are. I think there's pain all over the place. It's interesting because originally when we first sold our solution, the companies that would buy it would be the ones that had that were either, you know, big or had a huge number of SKUs. And you see that changing. And, you know, you mentioned healthcare and your experience. We see it a lot there where, you know, it's maybe a large company and they only have 50 products or 200 products. But these 200 products have hundreds and hundreds of attributes. They're all regulated. They are all different in every market or sector that they sell it in. And so it becomes impossible, even though there's only 50 products or 100 products, it still becomes impossible for them to manage as well in a very regulated way. And so, it is. I mean, I think at one time, even in the big companies, there, you know, you can put a whole, you know, department around this problem, and they do. You know, you have some kind of some companies, hundreds of people just doing this stuff and sending it out. It's just not practical anymore because, you know, what's happening as well is the number of channels is exploding as well. So it's, you know, you can't, you know, whether you finally, when you get your arms around the data part of it, you know, figuring out how to now handle the explosion of channels is a whole nother problem that they deal with and another pain point that they deal with.
Yeah, interesting. Two things. One is sort of a theme that I've picked up in our conversation is that humans, and it's just table stakes now, humans can't keep up with the various iterations of data and the facets that you have to deal with across the supply chain.
Yeah.
So that's thematic and you're part of your lived experience. The other, in terms of the explosion of channels or endpoint destinations, just a thought, and I don't know if I'm right on this. I have been doing research, and we've actually asked somebody to go out and study this for us because I don't have the right answer. I think there are 850,000 retail channels on the planet. And part of that is that if you go to certainly a highly developed part of the world, you get channels that we're kind of familiar with. You know, it may be Walmart, but it is certainly some of the large global retailers. But if you go to other regions of the world, you have mom and pop operations that make up the bulk of how people get their information and get their products. And if you count all of that up, my contention is there's somewhere around 850,000 endpoints.
Yeah.
And the way to satisfy that, if let's say you're a major hard goods manufacturer, if you're trying to get into some percentage, let's say you're trying to get to, I don't know, 50% penetration around the globe, that's 400,000 retail destinations.
Yeah.
These are just impossible numbers to imagine, right?
Yeah. And if you had asked me, I would have said it was a lot higher. So I'm glad you, I'm glad you corrected me. And you know, the other part of that, and you don't really feel the pain unless you've gone through it, is that 850,000 is really, in some cases, could be 100 or 200 times that for several reasons. You know, some of these bigger retailers treat every category almost as another retailer. You know, you're dealing with a department or, you know, something in there that they're independent. You know, one company doesn't treat every channel or every product category the same. So you're dealing with one retailer, it feels like you're dealing with 100. And then you throw on top of that, the channel endpoint, you may need to have 10 different versions for just that one endpoint as well. Maybe it's different languages or other considerations as well. So it's a big challenge. And I know you all feel that as well.
Oh yeah. And again, just to underscore the theme of, you cannot have, it doesn't matter if you have a team of 200 people, mm-hmm. It is an impossible task to have humans manage that at that scale or anywhere close to that scale.
That's right.
And I think we're entering a new era where companies are saying, hey, I don't want to sell through four channels. I want to sell through 4,000 channels.
Correct.
You're immediately outside the scope of what humans can handle. And you have to come to an Enterworks or a Wind Shuttle for that helping guidance. I don't think you have a choice. And along those lines, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting you say that, because we don't just say, come to Enterworks, come to Wind Shuttle to automate. We say to come automate at scale. Because that's what it's perfect. Really about. Yeah.
And it really is. And it sort of doesn't, even if I have, let's say I'm a German instrument manufacturer and I have two SKUs, I still want to move those SKUs to the most number of channels possible. And I can't do that with a team anymore. I need tech. I know we're winding down on time. I want to first thank you for spending time with us today. It's been, quite honestly, this flies by. I suggested it might. There's a few things that I didn't fully realize, just how similar our background is in getting into the world of data and automation. The second is some of our philosophies on even Deming, it would be really fun to explore with you, and perhaps we should. How do we move into Deming 2.0? Mm-hmm. And what are the implications of that? Mm-hmm. And the other is, and I just want to call this out, 850,000 is my working number. So the caveat on that is I haven't proven it yet. we are digging into, I have some folks that we're working with at the University of Michigan in supply chain who are actually trying to validate it, because there isn't, as far as I can tell, any research on it, which is A, mind-boggling, B, it does indicate that scale, as you and I talk about it, is there. And so the number is astounding, no matter what. I think it's, what number would you have guessed?
In the millions. I just don't know. But it just seems like the number of websites, retail websites and businesses around the world, it would be in the millions. But I have no, that's just my perception. I've never counted myself.
So we'll have to, I don't know the right answer. My working number is 850,000, not counting various, so Walgreens, for instance, is counted as one. Mm-hmm. It's not counted as each storefront, which maybe reduces the number in my mind. But we'll have to debate this over the next months and years. And
sounds great.
We'll see. We'll see if it's closer to your millions or closer to under a million. We'll see. But hey, thank you for the time. I've really enjoyed it. Diana, not to steal your wrap up, I'll let you do it, but Carrie, as long as I still have the mic, tell people how to get a hold of you or the folks at Wind Shuttle or InnerWorks. What's the best way to reach out?
Yeah, no, thanks. So from an internet perspective, website perspective, you can reach us at www.enterworks.com, enterworks.com. And my email address is Carrie, Kerry, Young@enterworks.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining us again, Carrie. If you guys missed the first episode with Carrie Young, make sure you go check that out to hear more about how Carrie got into the product content space in the first place and learn more about what EnterWorks and Wind Shuttle can do for you in terms of automating and automating at scale in particular for your business. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain, and we'll be back again next time for another episode.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Supply Chain podcast. It's brought to you by Venzee, intelligent product content distribution for enterprise commerce. Learn more and say hello to us at Venzee.com. That's V-E-N-Z-E-E.com.